I still don't have a way to start the show. I was hoping by hitting the button and the countdown would give me like a really good, like, oh yeah, got it. Say the, I don't. What's up?
Yeah. Hey. Hi.
Good morning.
Hi.
How's it going?
Hi.
Hi.
And we're started.
Yeah. What's new?
The spring is here. That's really nice. I probably said the same thing in the beginning of last show, but it is such a relief just doing yard work and organizing. You know, it's my whole backyard becomes the junk drawer in the winter. It's like, I'll deal with this later. I'll deal with this later. And then my back porch, I look like a hoarder. And I've gotten it cleaned up, so that's really nice. It's nice to be able to get rid of stuff and put stuff away. My house attracts pallets. I don't know why or how. But when you look kind of in this area where I park my cars, there was like 6 or 7 pallets just from the last year. I got rid of all those.
It's your house attracts pallets, but you don't know why?
No,
I would check your order history.
No, a lot of the pallets, and these I save because they're very expensive pallets. I've been warned not to throw them away because they're thick, thick oak. We do a lot of stonework. I've been getting a lot of stonework done around the house in the last several years. And the stones show up from the quarry on a pallet. And the pallet's like almost 1.5 inch thick oak. And these pallets, they're very heavy. They're like almost 100 pounds to pick the pallet up because they're solid oak and they're 4x4 feet and they're extra thick because they have big stones on them. So I got rid of a lot of those. Well, I had to put them down at another property. Oh, you know what I might be in? Well, fine. I'll let you guys know more as it goes. I might be in a property line dispute with one of my neighbors down by the graveyard house.
Oh, no.
Yeah. It's so stupid. We dug up the foundation, and one of the videos that's published, you could see us digging up a lot of dirt. My guy Kurt did it, dug up a lot of dirt and moved it to the other side of the street, which is my other property. So this property goes across the road, and he dumped it all on the corner of the property, and about 3 or 4 feet of it went over the property line to the neighbor's yard. And the neighbor came over and spoke to my mason the other day and was very threatening. He said, I'm going to get the state police involved if this doesn't get sorted out. And I said, this is the very first time I'm hearing about it. So, like, who is the guy trying to telepathically tell me he was upset about something? I still haven't met the guy. I went and knocked on his door. He didn't answer his door. And then I left a business card in his mailbox with information on the back saying I'm going to try and take care of the problem. But then when
Is it causing a problem for him?
He's just nitpicky. He just doesn't want the dirt on his edge of his property. And he's on, like, 10 acres, so it's... It's like if the tip of my shoe was over his line of property and the scale of things. Hmm. And so this to not, I mean, he's not going anywhere, neither am I. So I just called my guys, like, can you go over there and remove this? And he was there yesterday and he called me and he said, I'm looking at the problem that he thinks it's a problem. He goes, he technically doesn't own any of this property. It's owned by the state. Because it's still within 5 or 7 feet of his property line from the edge of, like, literally the black top and then like 8 feet over, like eight
oh,
feet.
So it's like easement. Area.
It's still on the easement. He says, like, none of this is technically on. He goes, this is all state property. It's technically not even on his land. I was like, well, let's just put, and I drew a line on the street. I was like, just put everything on the right side of the line. He's like, I said, I'll pay for whatever. I just don't want to get into an argument with this guy. I still haven't met him, so I don't know. I have no idea what he looks like. He's got 30 cars, so I figured we'd have something to talk about. They're all pickup trucks. I always figured I'd meet him one day and he'd be cool, but now he comes over threatening the police. It's definitely... Hmm. Yeah. I have a certain disdain for people that use the police, trying to weaponize the police. They immediately lose respect for me when they say, I'm going to call the police. I'm like, yeah, you do that and you'll never be my friend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tell him. Well, that's a bummer.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens. But it's kind of fun. It's, like, as soon as I found out, the way I found out is my mason doesn't have cell phone. He refuses to have a cell phone. He never had one. So every time he needs to talk to me, he comes to my house and knocks on the door. So he waddled into my shop the other day and he says, we might have a problem. And he told me the whole story. I was like, oh, okay. So I was anxious to get right over there. So as soon as I was done talking to him, I had to deal with a telephone call, and then I was done with the telephone call, and then I ran right over there to talk to the neighbor. And he wasn't around, or at least he didn't open the door.
This so reminds me of, off topic, but this so reminds me of Goodfellas, because the one boss refused to have a telephone in his house. There's Donald a little Trump. Sequence where he's like going to other people's houses and knocking on the door to talk to people.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah. Isn't it wild, like, when somebody just has this irrational reasoning for not ever wanting to do a thing?
I respect it, in a way.
Donald Trump doesn't have a phone.
By the way,
Donald Trump doesn't have a phone or an email. I don't think he must have a phone, but he doesn't have an email. That's crazy.
So Jimmy, to jump back, I thought about you yesterday, mm-hmm. and I had a question for you. I was watching Clarkson Farm. I don't know if you guys are familiar with this. Jeremy Clarkson, who was on Top Gear and Grand Tour and stuff.
Yeah, of course.
He has a show, and they're in season 3 of him. He owns this farm in England, and mm-hmm. it's about him trying to farm, become a farmer, you know, and like take. And it's a lot of land. And so it's about him learning how to do this stuff, and it's, you know, kind of a reality show, and it's very, very good. But every season, he's gotten a different animal. So, like, he did sheep and 1 year, and then he did cows, and this season he's doing pigs.
Oh, why not?
And so in this last episode that we watched, he got some pigs and then bred them so that he was going to have a bunch of piglets in this certain time. And he's doing this to raise, you know, he sells them for food and stuff. But in the process of having these pigs and these piglets, a bunch of them died for different reasons. Mm. You know, and him and his girlfriend were there trying to make sure that they were being born correctly and, you know, checking on them and checking on the mothers and stuff like this. And they kept finding these dead piglets that would get crushed by the mother or something. They were not ready to be born. And it was really, really hard on the two of them. It was sad at first. They're like, oh, we lost this one. Whoa, we lost another one. And then they're like, you're 10 or 12 in, and you're like, this is gut-wrenching, you know. But so watching them go through this, and they've gone through this with like birthing calves, and they've had chickens and all this stuff. They've gone through this a bunch of times. And so watching them, it got me thinking about you and just having birds around that are there for a purpose. You know, you like them and you take care of them and everything, but they're there for a purpose. And occasionally you will lose one. I'm sure you've lost several that you didn't expect to lose.
Yeah.
But like, how did... Maybe this is a weird question, but does that matter to you as someone who like has those animals for that kind of utilitarian purpose? They're not like dogs. They're not pigs that you can kind of snuggle with and stuff.
Yeah.
Does it affect you when you... Well, I mean, like, people have pigs as pets, like dogs.
Yeah.
Anyway, does the bird thing, like, how does it affect you when you lose
them? Well, it's, you know, you gotta have a certain... country life or farm life, there's a certain level of acceptability. You just got to be like, well, that's farm life. It does hurt. You know, when I open up my middle cabinet here in the middle of my house, there's a middle foyer. You open it up, there's cats and dog. It's like the cat and dog cemetery of all the dogs we've lost and cats I've lost over the years. We always get their ashes. When it comes to the birds, they come and go. It's almost like I'm just like, you guys could use this apartment. You don't have to pay me rent. Just look cool for a little bit. The other day we lost a duck. I don't know where it went. There's also a hierarchy in the coop. And I had six ducks. One died when he was baby last year. And now I have five ducks. And of the five ducks, I have one as a man, one as a boy. And he's always beating up the other four. And one got so beat up that it got banished into the blacksmith shop. At night, it wouldn't go inside. And I thought I had this whole fantasy. I'm going to make like a YouTube or an Instagram reel of me taking this duck, bringing it inside, making it a house duck, and letting its feathers grow back because it gets beat up. And I couldn't get near her. She wouldn't let me near her. She was so traumatized. And one day she was gone. I don't know where she was. And she's gone. I look around. I can't find her. She's gone. Either she got picked up by some sort of animal in the middle of the night, or she just waddled away to some other farm. To one of my neighbor's house. The turkeys, I have six turkeys in the last couple of weeks. Every spring is turkey season is mating season for the turkeys. So this one turkey kept walking across the street, and I live on a pretty busy road. In the daytime, there's lots of trucks on the road, and at night, there's nothing. But in the daytime, she's walked across the street like 7 or 8 times in the last couple of weeks. And my neighbor across the street goes, she's back. So I drop what I'm doing. I go over there. You saw on Instagram a couple days ago, me and Rob went and got one of them back. She could have easily gotten hit by a car, would have had no idea unless I happened to see her on the street, which sometimes, you know, gets taken by another animal, so you don't know. So I guess you just have to have a thick skin. They saw that's farm life. One of the guys on the Howard Stern show grew up on a farm, and he says that they would growing up, his father would, we'd name a cow, the family would name the cow, and Richard Christie, if anybody knows, and they name a cow, and then by the end of the season, they slaughter it and make it food. And he says he grew up with a thick skin, knowing that like every animal could potentially be a meal. So that's just farm life. I mean, I don't eat my dead pets, but last year, this time in the spring, I left the coop open one night, and then I lost about six or seven birds in one night because something went in there and slaughtered them. So,
like I mean, the whole idea of, you know, like raising them to eat, raising animals to eat, like I can see how if you know going into it, I'm going to name this thing, but its purpose is to eventually be slaughtered so that we can feed a lot of people. That, yeah, I mean, I could see how that would be sad, but you know what's going to happen. I think the hard thing that struck me from watching this show was that they were trying to help new life start, and it was totally out of their hands that a bunch of these things died. Like, they weren't doing anything wrong. It just...
Yeah, when I got the ducks last year...
I'm like, that would be tough.
When I got the ducks last year, one of them was like a little runty and like kind of not keeping up, and then eventually it died. You could always tell when like you have chicks, and there's always one of them that just is not growing fast enough and not keeping up with the pack and is having a hard time getting at the food. And then unfortunately, you come in one day and she's just like trampled and laying there. So that's obviously sad. You do grow a affinity for some birds over other birds. One of the hens is banished out of the coop completely, will not go back to the coop, doesn't go near the coop for food. I have to feed her every morning. Every time I open the back porch, she's there like the cats, waiting to eat. It's the three cats and the chicken every morning. I never really showed her. Every once in a while, she's in the kitchen walking around looking for cat food to eat. And she will not go back to the coop. She absolutely does not associate with any of the other birds ever. And so she's, I don't have a name for her, but she's always on the back porch at the door waiting to eat because she knows I'm going to throw out some cat food for her. I just throw it on the steps and she just pecks up. I'll throw out a whole handful of food. She just like walks around, pecks it all up, eats the whole thing. And so she's kind of like she's like the cat bird. She hangs out with the cats. They all, like I said, they all like three or four of them at the back door in the morning, like, let me in, feed me. And she's one of them. And then when I open the coop, I was like, there's food 100 feet away. She's like, no, not interested. I just want to stay here.
Wow.
So she's kind of like she's like the one chicken that's actually a pet. I'm going to put a collar on her. But that's what happens.
Yeah.
And you just see where it goes. I had a really beautiful turkey a couple years ago. I don't even remember how I got her. A neighbor gave it to me or something. And she was really, really beautiful bird. And one day I went out and a whole side was ripped open by an animal. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, she got attacked by something in the daytime. It wasn't even in the night, so she was out with the rest of the birds. Something attacked her and ran off, and there's nothing I could do with it. She just eventually died. It took her about 3 days to die. I was hoping that she'd have some sort of miraculous recovery and then live life with a hole in her side. It didn't work. She'd be like, bionic bird. But like, I was like, what am I going to take it to the vet? The vet's just going to say, put it down. She's missing 10% of her body.
Yeah.
So I just let nature do its thing.
That's wild. Yeah. Well, anyway, watching the show
farm life.
got me thinking about you because I think you're the only person I know that like, well, not the only person, but you know, you have birds and I actively see them on Instagram and you know.
I wanted to get a pig and I talked to a few people about a pig and they said, don't do it if you're not really willing to be full time with it and do the ups and downs because it's like a dog, you know, it still needs to go to the vet and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So at the moment, I'm not going to get a pig, but I thought about it. You know, Rachel Metz has a pig, and I've been wanting a pig for a long time, but Rachel Metz, if you follow Rachel Metz online, she's got a pig, and it's like her dog now. It's really cute, but he weighs like 300 pounds. It's crazy.
Anyway, that was a thing I was thinking about, but it's kind of unrelated to anything else. David, what have you been doing?
Yeah, so this week we took an old Bluetooth, not an old, we took a brand new Bluetooth radio that I found on Amazon, and I'm walnutifying it. So I'm making a new wooden case for it. And I bought this radio a few weeks ago, and I've been struggling with, like, what is the shape? I want to completely change the shape of this thing. And And I saw your window in your clean room that you're working on. And it has this trapezoid shape with rounded corners. And I was like, that might work as a good little shape for this radio. Hmm. And so I took that as inspiration, and I changed it up a little bit. So the bottom of it has like a little curvy swoop in there. And so we just took a bunch of walnut and resawed it into thin strips and did this crazy bent lamination. It's close to being done. It's got some grill cloth on the front, so it kind of has like this old guitar amp kind of feel to it. But the recasing things out of wood is one of my favorite things to do, because it's can be frustrating because there's unknowns when you take electronics apart, and everything that is made these days is just so compact. And so on this particular radio, it's very square. Like most Bluetooth radios that you see are crazy curved and have all these weird shapes. This one is just like a box, and it was perfect for us to just kind of build around this box. And so this is going to live in the rental house. I think it's going to be a little Bluetooth radio for the kitchen, and it's almost done. I think the video should be out this weekend.
Cool. Right on. Yeah, I've seen you do the, you know, put a new face or on old things a bunch of times. And I would love to do that. I'd be ripping you off at this point. But I would love to do that because it does seem like there's a lot of things that you would have to constantly be working around, you know.
I always
wanted to do that. After you did the sides for the synth,
the
side panel things, I always wanted to do something like that for the Rhodes. But that would be a really big undertaking.
That synth video, I've done it a couple times, and they're both at least like 6 or 7 years old now. And I still get emails from owners of that particular synth saying, can you make panels for mine? And I was like, unfortunately not. But we have
you
failed
could.
Completely. What's that?
You could.
I could, but...
You have a CNC.
Yeah. I'm still just one person. It's still like, I was just thinking today, like the minimum amount of time it takes to make a video, no matter how simple, is 5 days. There's 1 day of planning, gathering materials, cleaning up the shop. There's usually 2 days of filming and then 2 days of editing. And that's just the minimum video. And then I'm trying to do all these other things. And I don't want to grow a team because I'd like the freedom of doing what I want. So yeah, it's a struggle. There's a lot of things that I could do, but I'm still enjoying making the video, so I'm gonna keep at that until it doesn't work anymore. But we did fail completely one time. I took a record player, and it was all plastic, and I wanted to make it out of wood, and we started filming it, took it all apart, and I got some wood for it, and it was just way too complicated. And the record player got trashed because I just couldn't figure it out. It was too tough. So it doesn't always work.
Yeah, yeah. You said something that it got me thinking. The minimum video investment. So this isn't. It just got me thinking. Okay, it doesn't mean anything. I'm not pointing it at you or me or anything. That is an interesting thing to think about with what we do. That every week, 2 weeks, whatever our schedule is, we have to do the same prototyping, design, production process. We do all the editing and all of the stuff. And we do that entire start to finish process. And there is a minimum amount of time to do even the simplest thing. It has a minimum block of time and requirement as far as like infrastructure and the stuff you have to use to film it and all those things. And then when you think about making a product, even if it's something that you don't make very often, you do that same kind of setup time or that preparation, that design, you do that once, and you don't, the next week you don't have to redo that design sell that same thing again, but you get to pick up, you know, maybe 50% way through the process, and then you do that production part. And it, granted, it still has its own additional stuff. Every instance of that has shipping, it has you know, management of the products, of the shipping materials. There's other stuff that goes into it for sure. That's kind of an interesting thing to think about, is that we are really doing startup mode prototyping start to finish every time, and producing a product, you do that, but then the further you do it, the more you do it, the less new investment goes into production or something. Yeah. I mean, I'm saying that from a place of not having done it, so I don't really know that that's the case. But
well, I think one of the things that I think about quite a bit is 6 or 7 years ago, a video didn't take 5 days. I would come up with an idea, maybe film it that evening or the next day, edit it the day after, and then it's done. And then, like, the minimum was 3 days. But my personal standards, my personal workflow, doesn't allow me to do something so quick, because I have this expectation of myself, and I don't want to go below that, because I don't want to go backwards. So it's almost impossible for me to enjoy making a video that only takes a day or two.
Oh yeah. Do you know which part of that process has grown? Required more time?
I think so. It's
creating more polished work for me.
I think what I do now is there's a little bit more thought into the projects that I'm doing, because I'm not making here's another cutting board or a phone holder or something. There's a little bit more process to the projects. And also, like, I'm constantly thinking about, like, camera angles. Okay, we shot at this angle for, you know, maybe we shot for 2 minutes, which is only a 5 second clip. We need to change it up. So the flow of the video, I'm constantly thinking of the flow of the video. If I go back and look at my older videos, you know, the flow isn't there. Like, it's not necessarily slower. Like, some of them are faster, but the feel of the video isn't the same. So it's, I don't know. And the video production part of it is just as enjoyable, if not more enjoyable, than the actual woodworking. So the video is the art for me.
Right. Interesting. Yeah, I'm not sure. It definitely takes longer for me as well, and I'm trying to figure out what part of it takes longer.
It's something I haven't thought about, except I think it's just my expectations of myself.
Yeah. I know the thumbnail titling part of it is like a whole, it feels like a day by itself now. Mm-hmm. Where it used to be, you know, you'd make a
whatever
video,
the suggested
you'd do the
square
thing.
Was.
That's what I used to. It was just, yeah. Well, it was like, you know, you get done with a thing and you put it on the table and you're like, cool, I'm going to take a picture of that. And that's the thumbnail. And then you, at least for me, the title was how to make the thing that's in the picture that you're looking at right now.
Mm-hmm.
That was it. And so it was very quick, and it wasn't something that had to be scrutinized. Now, I mean, yesterday morning, we spent, I don't know, 3 hours, two hours, taking thumbnail options for two videos.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, you know, getting lighting set up and trying to think about, you know, composition within the frame, and like, how big is my face in regard to everything else, and are they going to be drawn to looking at me or the thing, and you know, what feeling are we getting across, and which title did we pick, and does the thumbnail work with the title, do they answer each other's questions? And it's a different thing, but that has become an entire new process by itself that has to be put in, and that I don't particularly feel like I'm very good at. But I think even within making the video, it's gone from here's what I'm doing or here's what I'm about to do. I still say that, but it's a lot more of how can I get from this action to the next action and explain along the way the thought process. So it's a lot of like, say half a sentence to this way and then move the camera from a different direction to drive people towards that thing that I'm headed to and finish the sentence, and then move it again to pick up a new sentence, and then move it again to finish the sentence, and then I'm at the new location, or I'm at the new tool, or I'm at the new whatever. And the thing that takes longer about that for me is I will do that in the three segments leading up to the thing, and then I get to the end and I realize, oh, I didn't say that one necessary thing that I had to say. So I have to go back and do the whole sequence again and shoot the entire conversational bits up to that. You know. So, I mean, I guess I could leave that stuff out. I'm making it harder on myself, but...
I mean, I think you could probably compare this to like any musician or filmmaker who just started off in their garage or their spare bedroom, and you know you're recording on a 4-track, and then you have a little bit of success, so you get more equipment, and maybe that first album it was easy to make. The second album is a little bit harder, and then there's you know the production value keeps going up and up, and you rarely go backwards.
Yeah, that's true. Speaking of that, something you said made me, it reminded me of, I put a thing on Instagram yesterday, day before, something. Mm-hmm. I made the mistake of looking at YouTube comments. You know, I'll kick myself for that. But one of the comments was like, I don't even remember specifically what they said.
Stay
now.
Stay in your lane to something that expect?
Yeah, it was like, you're bad at electronics, go back to woodworking.
Right.
Effectively. I don't remember exactly how they said it. But I kind of chuckled at it because, like, go back to woodworking as if I'm good at that. Like, I'm bad at one thing and go back to the thing I'm good at? Like, I disagree with you, sir. But more than that, it was like, man, what a terrible way to live. Like, it really, it didn't hurt me. It didn't even frustrate me. It was just like, that person... They tell other people to go away from things that they're not good at? Like, what a terrible way to treat people and live and think about things. And it motivated me in the moment to make a thing on Instagram just to encourage people to stay bad at, and not stay bad at things, but like stay in places where you are bad at things. And I just wanted people to know that, you know, just because you're bad at something doesn't mean you should abandon it and go back to something that you know. Like, you get better at things by doing them, or you get far enough in that you realize this is not my thing. This is not something that I need to continue forever, but at least you didn't run away from it because you were bad at it. And I kind of put that out just as an encouragement for people.
Some of the best videos on YouTube are videos of people learning how to do stuff.
Exactly. Yes. The response I got from people was like off the charts. Yes, I completely agree. Man, I didn't think I needed to hear that today, but now I do. Somebody even said, somebody told me this morning, I think they were a drummer and they were trying to learn how to sing, and somebody, one of their friends told them to stop trying to sing and go back to drumming. And then he saw my little comment about the thing. He was like, no, I'm going to stick with it. Like, it's just, it's wild to me. And I know that I look at things maybe a little bit differently than other people, and I have a different opinion about what we're capable of than other people do. And I feel really blessed that I have that opinion, that I'm not held down by fear to try new things. I know not everybody is that way. But man, like, it just, it worries me. It makes me sad when people are so afraid of being bad at something that they're not willing to continue to do it. And from saying that out loud on Instagram, I heard that from people. They were like, yes, I am afraid of continuing to do something that I don't know how to do, or I'm afraid to get started because I know I'm going to be bad at it for a long time, or something like that. And it just, I don't know, it made me sad because it makes me sad to see people not live up to their potential and like just try things. And
my first thought is like, man, I hope this person doesn't have kids. Like, you wouldn't raise your kids to not try new things.
Some people do, though, and that also makes me sad that some people find a thing that somebody they love is good at, and they encourage that, and they push everything off to the side, everything else that they're not good at, not even bad at. You know, it's like they find that the kid is really smart. Well, you're going to be a school person now. You're doing, like, all the tests and all the things, and you don't get to do anything else. People do the same thing with, like, sports or music, and then they find something that they're good at, and they invest so heavily in that that they don't get the chance to find other stuff. I've got one of my kids is a fantastic soccer player. He can also play classical music that I can't play on the piano, and he plays flute, and he's great at math, and he does it all. Wow. And if I had picked any one of those things and been like, stay in your lane, like, everybody else would be missing out on getting to watch him play music and watch the engineering that he's going to do someday in his life, probably, and watch him play soccer and be really good at it. If I had drilled him down to a singular thing, it just, man, it fires me up, and it makes me excited for people who are not afraid, but worried and sad for people who are afraid to continue to do something that they're bad. And to that person, you're not listening because you obviously don't care about thinking about things. You have a bad opinion of of like being bad at things, but I hope that person is listening, and I hope they think about that.
A couple of weeks ago, a couple months ago, when I was working on the chain, I was excited. Like I said last week, you could always tell when I'm excited about something. I post a lot about snippets of it, and I posted a snippet of me figuring out the chain link jig, and this one guy says, "You're obviously not a blacksmith." And I looked at his world, and he's a blacksmith teacher. And I was just blown away. I'm like, I had to repost, and I posted the little screen grab. And he said, obviously, you're not a blacksmith. I said, obviously, you're afraid that you feel threatened, that I'm encroaching, and you don't like to share. And he didn't respond. Funny thing that Derek did. And Derek is like my man. It was so funny. Derek reached out to the guy and said, because the guy's a teacher, and he's just, every one of his posts is, I have a class on this day. It's only 3-person class, and I'm going to teach this, and I'm going to teach that. Derek wrote to him and said, hey, I want to take a class, but he's in Virginia. He goes, I want to take a class, but I'm in Boston. He's like, well, you could take this class, that class. And this is the day Derek had a DM conversation. He goes, oh, never mind. I found a much better teacher in New York named Jimmy DiResta. And acted as if he didn't know anything about the comment. But I just posted, I said, can you believe this guy is a teacher? Like, if you're a teacher, you accept the idea of like letting people just have fun. My post didn't say I was the best blacksmith. My post didn't say I'm as good as anybody who's been doing this for 60 years, because that's what the guy, every one of his comments is, I'm a 60-year experience. He must be 70 years old. He said, I've been doing this for 60 years. I know everything. Every one of his posts. But could you imagine me watching somebody try and do something and then say, You're obviously bad at that. Like,
yeah,
that is just reeks of insecurity.
Yeah.
I think something we don't think about too much is that person that makes that comment, they're probably not as bad as their comment in real life. Right?
There's, no, they are.
There's,
true.
That is true. There's,
they are.
there's just a...
My recommendation this week is going to be the Colin Quinn special that he just put up on his YouTube channel. He talks about how the concept of manners and being gracious to each other is going to be bred out of the society because of YouTube, because of comments. People now can say anything they want and not risk. Could you imagine now a child that's 8, 9 years old can't say, oh, those are funny looking pants, I can't believe your mom let you dress like that, and get punched in the nose in the schoolyard. Well, maybe I shouldn't be that type of a bully anymore. But now imagine somebody who's able to do that online and not have face any consequences of getting punched in the face or being scolded, and just continues to grow and develop that personality of someone that's just a bully. He said it's going to be bred out of society. He said it's the end of decorum.
Maybe, but it matters where you live. I mean, I don't mean like geographically, I mean, if you live behind a screen your entire life, yes, that may happen. But at some point, you have to probably go into the workplace. You have to go to school. You have to go into the workplace. And there will always be people who will not put up with your crap, who are not going to allow you to be rude. And whether they do that, whether they fight back and punch you in the face, or they publicly put you in your place as far as your manners, or they respond with kindness. There will always be people who are not going to allow you to be that way to
them. I'm going to be the devil's advocate. That person who gets pushed back will go start an anonymous Facebook account and start ripping you online.
And then they might, but that's my point. It's like you have this behind the screen life.
Yeah.
And if you live there, and if you decide to live there, then you are deciding to live in a pretty terrible place. Yeah. If you spend time there, but you live in the world with people and relationships and face-to-face and workplaces and school and sports teams and parks and, you know, like real life, then you don't have to worry about those Facebook posts and the people ripping you and giving you a world that's not actually about you. I mean, I think I agree to a point, but I don't want to live there. I don't want to live behind a screen so much that those voices matter. Those people with no decorum, those people mm-hmm. with no manners that live there, I don't want to live in that place with them. So, but David, to your point, yes, those people are probably not as bad as the comment that they made. I agree.
Yes, they are.
I mean, you got to give people the benefit of the doubt. I look back at my life and I've said lots of things that I am ashamed of.
Yep.
I have treated people in lots of ways that I am ashamed of that do not represent how I am as a person.
Or represent who you are now compared to who you were 10 years ago.
100%. Yes, I agree. I had another thought and I lost it. I don't know. Whatever. It doesn't matter. So I've been working on my clean room. So I finished up last week getting the room like built and painted and blank. And so I finished that video, and now this entire week has been trying to make it look like I want it to look. And so I'm like building animations and adding lights, and I came up with a really cool system to add lights to the ceiling that I actually didn't tell you guys about. So there's a drop ceiling in this room, and it's all black. So there's like the black metal track and then black tiles that drop in. And so I wanted to put these LEDs on the ceiling in this kind of pattern pathway, but I didn't want to just stick them to the, I wanted them to be close. And so I couldn't spread them out and put them on just the metal tracks, 'cause that's like a 2x2 grid on the ceiling. I wanted them to be closer than that, but I also didn't want to stick the strips to the tiles, because then I couldn't take the tiles out. And so I took the coroplast, you know, the sign material, like the corrugated plastic stuff, and I cut a pathway that matches the path that I wanted on the ceiling. So I cut all these pieces, and then I took rare earth magnets and taped them, used like 3M tape, and put them on the back of this coroplast to match up with the grid on the ceiling. And so this entire shape that I've made just kind of goes, just like sticks to the ceiling, like magnetically. And then all the LEDs and stuff are on that thing. And it's all painted black, so you can't really see it. It just blends into the ceiling. But when I need to get to a tile, I can just pop the tile out. Or if I need to take all this stuff down, it's all magnetic and it just like snaps down and comes out. It's like super lightweight. But it worked out as a pretty cool way to be able to mount a lighting system to a drop ceiling that's really independent.
How are you gluing the magnet? I'm just curious, because every time I glue a magnet to something, I pull it off and the magnet stays where it is and the object comes away.
Oh, it's like VHB tape. Okay. It's not actually VHB, but it's, you know, these these little circles of 3M tape that came with the magnets.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And the magnets are big. They're not like the strongest ones, like the crazy strong ones that you get that are thick, but they're big. So they're about maybe a 1-inch circle, and I can't remember the thickness, but they're pretty thin. They're strong enough with the surface area to hold it up, but then when you go to pull them away, you know, you break that like face-to-face attachment is not hard to do. So they're just strong enough. I have some rare earth magnets that are maybe a 1/4-inch thick, and I have pinched my skin and got a blood blister when the two of those snapped next. They're so strong that you got to be really careful with them. These are not like that. So, but anyway, I've been working on that room, and I still have a lot of programming left to do and a lot of, you know, like LED mounting, and I'm doing this whole, trying to figure out this whole like acrylic edge lit system to be able to kind of decorate the walls with acrylic, but then have it movable, have it like so I can change it.
Remind me what this room is for when you're, when it's all done. Is this just a family playroom?
No, no. This is like in the back of the shop. This is all the 3D printers.
My electronics
station. It's kind of like a lab.
Yeah.
That's kind of the way I'm looking at it. And it feels like it. Just, it's a black room top to bottom, and it glows and has animation, and there's like, it feels really cool in there. So pretty excited about it. I hope the video turns out. It's one of those things where the amount of programming work and like fiddly electronics type stuff to get it working is not very, you know, it's not interesting to watch like that stuff on video. So trying to get just the interesting parts of putting it all together. And then I'm a little bit worried about capturing the way it looks in real life on video, because it's such a dark space and you have this like super high contrast of these bright LEDs that are animating very quickly against a black everything. And so I'm not, I think it's going to take some time for us to get beauty shots that actually.
Do you have a 360 cam, like. Bob?
I do. Yeah.
Yeah. Might be fun to at least throw a couple of frames of a 360 cam in there.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
As a transition.
I don't know that we've ever actually used it for the 360 stuff, but we do have one, so yeah, we'll try that. But I think we're going to end up spending like an entire day just doing the beauty shots, and I'm going to have to slow down some of the animations so that the cameras can actually pick them up, and you know, so there's going to be some tweaking to do. But
this is why videos take so long to make. You're going to spend an entire day for 60 seconds of a video, maybe even less.
Yeah. Yeah, probably less than that.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. But
I was thinking.
Go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say, I was thinking about that today. How even in this day and age, we're still collecting objects to create a moment in time. For instance, there's lots and lots of being New York centric. There's lots and lots of clips online about this new Bob Dylan movie they're making. Have you seen this new Bob Dylan movie they're making?
I've heard about it.
When he comes to New York for the first time in 1963 or 4 or 2. They're creating all these different parts of New York as if it's 1963 or 4 or 2. And there's all these period. Even Casey Neistat yesterday posted he was walking through one of the sets and it was just old car after old car along some one of the streets in the village. Huh. They're recreating the moment when Bob Dylan first came to town.
I just saw him a few months ago perform.
Oh, I might see him this summer.
Nice.
He's playing at Bethel. I think I'm going to go see him.
Cool.
So anyway, I was just thinking how complicated it is that we still, as a species, still collect hundreds of old cars to create a moment in time. Well, you could just do that with AI, and then everything would have like a flashy halo around it, and
like a dragon head sticking out of some old Pontiac or something.
Everybody's got nine like fingers AI. Instead. Yeah. Everyone's got nine fingers on one hand.
So, okay, just real quick AI conversation, just because it's not related to anything, but I thought about it. Last night, we had a Maker Alliance hangout. That's like our Patreon and YouTube membership thing for I Like to Make Stuff. So we're hanging out, talking about jobs, because a few people have lost their jobs recently, and a few people are looking to hire people, and so they were, you know, kind of talking back and forth and everything. So one guy, Sean, who you, I think, have both met. Jimmy, I know you've met Sean from England. Sean in the Shed. He was telling me about the hiring process now for some of these tech jobs. These are like programming, IT, you know, front end, back end, that type of job. There are AI bots that are trained specifically to vet resumes. And so when you apply for a job, you have to modify your resume to beat the bot, so the bot doesn't know that you've applied for a job in that world. Not even like a specific job. Like the recruiter system is using AI to filter resumes before they even get to a person. And I'm like, I don't know about AI. I mean, I get that AI has pros and cons, but when it's like that, and it's in place of a personal vetting system to get to a certain point, and you have to like craft a resume around a bot that feels like a huge waste of time. And you're creating a skill set in a person that there's no other reason to have.
I don't. So have you ever posted online saying, I'm looking for somebody to help me out with this? And then you set up like an email address, like a just for this position, and you get so many people who just don't follow directions or didn't read the description, and they're like, I see it all the time. Somebody will post on Facebook, I'm looking for somebody who can do this. Go to this website, fill out this thing, and mm-hmm. the people are applying in the comments. Like,
yeah,
AI is going to be great for just weeding out the people who don't follow directions.
I mean, yeah, that's filtering. I get that. But this is more like, I've applied for a job before, so my resume is in this machine learning cloud bowl of information. I don't know. It's in there. And now I want to apply for a different job. I can't put the same resume in because the bot goes, oh, this person already applied for mm-hmm. that job over there, and they didn't get it, so I'm not even going to, like, pay attention to them. Like, that's terrible. That doesn't mm-hmm. make any sense. And you have to redo your resume completely to apply for a different job at a different company? Like, that, I don't know. It's just something about that feels... I don't know. It's very strange. But
again, another counterpoint is, shouldn't your resume and your cover letter be modified for each different job that you're applying for? I am out of this world by a decade, so yeah. I don't know.
Too, yeah. But. I don't think I've ever submitted my resume to anybody.
I feel like if you're applying for a different position, sure. But like, if I describe my skill set, man, this is, I don't know how we got here. If I describe my skill set on a piece of paper and I say to somebody, these are my skills as they apply to job X, programmer in this language, let's just say. These are my skills in regard to that work. Now, I don't get that job, but another company has the same position open. Same requirements, maybe even working on the same type of thing. Do I have to come up with a way to rebuild my description of myself to do the exact same thing at a different place?
Just have AI do it for you.
That's my point. That's where I'm going, okay? That people are using AI tools to describe themselves to beat an AI tool that wants you to describe yourself differently. What a waste of technology. It's great for lots of things. It has lots of potential. I get
saying
it, but
it's canceling itself out for its purposes.
Yeah, and like it's putting in another thing he was telling me that in the UK they have an AI bot that they've just put in place, and no, it's not everywhere. On the emergency line, on their version of 911, it takes the first responder call and decides whether it has a conversation with a person and decides whether it needs to be transferred to an actual human or not.
That's crazy.
Like, I don't know. I get England's, it from one
England's
perspective
always
is because
been, England always uses a lot. They have like face technology.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
You need
yeah.
to get a permit to have fun in England and Canada. You know, like, they always like have so many rules. It's crazy. Like,
I mean, I get that. Like, his point was, it filters out some people who are not emergency, so that it gets people more quickly to someone who can actually help them and doesn't put as much weight on the.
But you know there's going to be people that fall through the cracks. You know it.
Absolutely. And it takes be like one. It takes one yeah. person to die from not yeah. the bot not understanding what they were trying to say or what. I don't know. But anyway, it was a weird conversation as to just talking about how AI is being put in these different places that I
you know what
have
I can't
expected
stand
it
now?
To be yet. Eventually, yeah, but
when you go to search now, it says ask me anything. When you go to search in Instagram, you go to just look for your friend that you grew up with, and you go to look, and then it says ask Meta anything. I'm like, am I in the wrong page? I just want yeah. to type in, and if it overhears something, I've gotten a couple little confused. When it first started showing up last week, I was like, oh my god, this is ridiculous. No matter what I ask you, you're not going to find it. So please, just go away.
Yeah, I mean, it's just very quickly becoming a part of everything.
And I didn't understand it. I meant to watch it again, but last night I watched Philly D, Phil DeFranco, talks about how Google now is going to have some sort of AI-inspired or AI-influential search. And he said somehow in the mix of things, people's traffic is going to go down 90%. I don't understand what it was. I had to go back and watch. I have to go back and watch it again. It was one of the last things I watched last night. But he was talking about how Google is now going to utilize AI in the search. So when you type in or whatever, AI is going to do it. I don't know what. Isn't AI always the way it was done? I don't understand it. But something about it is going to really change the way search results are shown. And therefore, lots of people who rely on Google searches, maybe they're paying for them or whatever, are going to be left in the lurch. And I don't really understand how or why. I got to go back. I shouldn't even have brought it up if I don't know the answer. But I was hoping maybe either of you guys saw that and could
explain. I didn't see that. I mean, I do know that like a language model will make searching like way, way better. Because if I say to David, can you tell me about putting walnut sides on a keyboard? You have a point of reference from your personal experience that fills in all sorts of gaps outside and around that actual question because of your model that you have in your head. So the language model for an AI is going to do kind of the same thing. So if you're like, you don't know the right vocabulary, but you're saying, hey, you know, Google bot, can you tell me about the things that hold up the back porch that I need to put underneath the post? It has enough information there to extrapolate out lots more answers than I used the word post and porch and this. Now it knows like, oh, you know, those things are usually attached to this stuff and they bring in these types. Here are some options for the, and it has this expanded vocabulary around the basic questions. So in that case, I totally get it. I'm just surprised at how quickly those same types of models are being put into things that they don't seem as important, but I guess it doesn't cost anything. It just, it's weird to put it in like resume filtering and
people filtering
and I don't know.
Will AI be better at customer service than the menu systems that we have to go through now? Like when you call somebody and you're like, press one, blah, 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 blah. It would be, I think that's where I could see it being so much more helpful, where it's just like, what do you need? And then you just speak.
Wasn't that supposed to be, hasn't it been AI the entire time?
Well, Google search technically is AI.
You can say things.
Yeah.
But I mean, even when you call into a menu and it says, you can say anything like, I lost my card or blah, 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 blah. And you try and do any, none of those ever work.
Well, but even still, it's like trying to decipher, you said the word lost and card, and that means I know that those two words mean I should push you to this extension or whatever. And with a language model, it's saying, it's understanding the sentence and all of the parts of the sentence, and then has a conversational history with, when people say these things, this is what they actually mean, and these are ways that they could be helped and stuff. I'm with you on like customer service. Absolutely. And from one perspective, maybe the whole 911 thing is a customer service line.
Mm.
I mean, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you think about like trying to get somebody's information, what do you need?
Yeah.
How can I get you to the thing that you need as quickly as possible? It's kind of the same thing. So maybe it does make sense there, but it feels more important when people's health and safety is on the line, but whatever. Anyway, I was surprised to hear that it's already being moved into things
have
that quickly.
Either of you guys used AI for editing yet? I've seen some guys online. I personally have no idea how to get to
it
that.
It wouldn't
point.
Work with my style of editing. I've seen, I think Adobe has something or somebody does where it, for podcasts, it'll remove silence and or it'll put together a quick like camera A, camera B, whoever's talking, like it looks like that's useful. But for the type of editing we do, I don't think there's anything even remotely in capable of doing what we're looking for.
Right.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I think it's possible though. I think it's a matter of there being a system that could watch our videos in the past and learn, use them to build a model around, you know,
DJI,
the DJI stuff like that.
The DJI drones, well, this is, it's going, you go back to 2017, 2018 when Kyle was was building my building in the backyard, and he's a very good drone operator, and he also utilizes the program. You know, you get these programs, you don't even use them, you just use them to maybe put the information on your phone, and that's that. But he went in, dug into, and this is 2017, 2018. He goes, you see these beautiful drone shots? Everybody thinks I'm such a great editor. I just do the suggested thing. You just hit boom, and it makes its own edit, and it might even put music to it. He goes, you just do that a couple times till you find one that works, that spits out one that's good. He goes, and that's the one I post. I was very impressed with that. And he says, you know, at that time, it was just like a useless feature. He'd be like, I don't need that. I just need the 2-second clip I need of the air thing from the air. But he'll have his folder on his drone, and the app, the DJI Mimo app or whatever it is, will say, here's a suggested 30-second sequence based on the several flights you took. And then it looks amazing. It's got the transitions, and it seems to know to select what the main focus of the objects are. And that was 2017. That was that many years ago.
Yeah. I mean, that stuff is still in place. Like the I have the Osmo or the Pocket 3, which is the DJI.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. By now, it must be even better. Yeah.
So it will do that. The Ace Pro by Insta360 will do, they call them like magic clips or something, and it will automatically pick out things that it thinks are action-y or whatever, because it's an action cam. The software that we're recording on right now, Riverside.fm, we don't use this, but it, at the end, as soon as we finish recording, like as soon as our all three of our video goes up, it's transcribed before it even gets up there. And then within maybe 5 minutes, a bunch of clips show up that are what it thinks are highlights from this show. And it switches cameras between the people. And what it's doing is it's reading all of that transcription. Wow. It's doing that AI magic on this looks like a conversational chunk. And then it just goes to those time codes in the video, switches between who's talking, and creates a little single video that we could download and put right on Instagram that is a conversational chunk that makes sense, that's contained from the show. And it does like 10 of them every episode. That's wild.
I always wonder why at the
and
end
it works. You
know? At the end, there's like when we finish and say goodbye, there's these clips, there's like several thumbnails on the thing. I never knew why they were there. I'm like,
that's
wait,
what those are.
I thought it was like the last four conversations we had, but I'm like, no, wait, we're all wearing the same clothes, so I guess it's just different choices from the same.
Yeah. And I mean, we do those on Instagram. We put up those same type of clips, but we do them manually. I mean, I don't do them. We have Brandon do them, but it's the same kind of thing. I tested a few of them from this particular site, and like they were pretty good, but they still, you know, like the camera changing was not how I would have done it. Didn't have captions on screen and stuff like that, so we just do them ourselves. But those tools are being built into everything, which I'm not opposed to, because in cases like that, it makes a lot of sense, and it would help somebody who was struggling to get a podcast out have a bunch of extra. You have a transcription that you can put on your website just automatically. You have clips that you can put on social automatically, you know, with no extra effort. There's just places that I didn't expect AI to be already used. But then you think about it. We were talking about this last night as well. They've been talking about AI for 30 years, right. 40 years, as like a theoretical someday computers will do this thing. And then a few years ago, it was like, still, someday they'll do this thing. And then like 2 years ago, all of a sudden it was doing a thing. And now, every month, it's doing a new thing. And it's doing way more of
every
it. And
month
it's ending up in
like,
all these places
like
that you didn't
every
expect.
Every month seems like a five-year leap. It is
bonkers. It's happening way faster than what everybody
thought.
It's
really scary. I love our freedoms, but I do hope that there is going to be government regulation on a lot of this stuff, because
there's going to be the black market. Forget it.
Yeah, it's going to be scary.
Forget about it. Just got to be careful. Set up a safe word with your family and just be cautious.
Yeah.
That's it. I had this conversation with Rachel's dad the other day, who's an intellectual. He's a New York writer, and he's a very smart guy. And we were talking, and he reminded me, in the context of this conversation we were having, he said it took us a lifetime for the Wright brothers to get off the air and fly. Literally, it's society's lifetime, 10,000 years, for the Wright brothers to figure out how to get off the ground. And in 40 years from then, we were on the moon. So once you reach a technology, I mean, that's a pretty common thing, but he, in the context of what we were talking about, he reminded me comparing it to something else. But when you think about it like that, it took us all, humanity's lifetime, human's lifetime, to get off the ground, and then 30 years later, we're on the moon.
It's a good perspective.
50 years later. Yeah.
That's crazy. Yeah. Think about that.
Mm-hmm. And so then when this technology that would, once you break the skin and you're like, okay, now we're in it. Okay, well, oh, now we can just do this. Then we can do that. Do that.
Yeah. So, have you all seen the movie The Creator?
Earth will be over soon.
I don't think so.
I'm not sure that I would want to recommend it. It's good. I don't mean it like that. And it's not. It's a fiction, science fiction movie. It's not, you know, our future or anything. But it's a really interesting look at, in the kind of near future, I don't know, maybe 50, 100 years, something, I don't remember the timetable, where AI becomes in physical robots, and they create these actual robots that are kind of sentient, but they are here to serve humanity. And the story is really interesting in that it, I don't want to give anything away. It's kind of interesting, and it looks
never
going to
watch
cool.
It. It's okay, you can tell me.
Well, I got to tell everybody else who's listening. But anyway, it's an interesting take on if we were to, you know, if we took this one branch going into the future, and it all happened this one way, what would it look like when we decided we were wrong, or we were right, depending on how you look at it. So. Anyway, I don't know how we got to AI. That was not an intent today, but we've talked about it for a long time. Got any other thoughts on AI?
There's so much good and bad. And
I'm really excited to see where it goes. Yeah. It is like every time I see a new update, either on a Philly D or somebody else's videos, I see a new update and people are like, can you believe it? I'm like, wow, that's really cool. Just got to be more cautious. You know, just never watch the news anymore. Unless the politician's in your yard talking to you, don't believe anything anybody says. I mean, that's the only thing I keep thinking.
And even then, I mean.
I had a conversation with a buddy recently, and he makes his living by playing locally at bars. He's a piano player and a guitar player. And he's like, this is not good for music, because AI music creation has just become absolutely bonkers lately. And I said, I don't ever see myself wanting to listen to AI music. I connect with people. I connect with bands. I connect with stories.
When you begin to not know the difference,
I think that's the key.
Yeah, I suppose.
New pop song comes up and you start tapping your toe. You're like, oh, this is pretty good.
And
you
find out, like, and I think it's, people don't exist. Pop music is the first place that it'll happen because... I know that pop music now is not my thing. It's not an area that I'm familiar with. And so the artists that are... My daughter knows all of the current, you know, pop music artists, and she knows who they are. She knows what they look like. She knows what they sound like. She could pick them out in a crowd. I don't. I hear the music through her, but I have no idea where it came from. And so you could replace one of those... And I'm not saying, like, it's not a quality thing. It's just not a genre that I'm into. But you could replace one of those pieces of music with an AI-generated one, and I wouldn't know, because I wouldn't have known.
To be fair, pop music over the last 20 years sounds AI-made anyway, right?
That is very true,
But then you hear, like,
feel free to email me your complaints.
then you hear, like, Hank Williams singing N.W.A., and you're like, okay.
Yeah.
I've listened to one of those, and I was like, okay, I get it. And then... and I keep seeing them pop up or whatever. I'm like, I don't care. It can be done. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Sorry.
Anyway, let's move on.
Oh, man. Three guys who don't know what they're talking about. Stick to woodworking, guys.
We should find something. Yeah, seriously. We should find something next week that we don't know and just talk about that for an hour. Big thanks to everybody over at Patreon for making it possible for us to talk about stuff we don't know anything about. Thank you to you. especially our top supporters over there: Crabtree Creative, Michael Menegin, Warren Works, Jeff at the New Janky Workshop, Scott at Dad It Yourself DIY, Sean Beckner, Odin Leather Goods, Rich at Low End Design, Chad's Custom Creations, Chad from Mancrafting Works by Solo, Albers Woodworks, Corey Ward, and Nick Ryan.
You're getting good at that.
Big thanks to them. Thank you. And people like, let's see here. Let me go down the list pretty far. Brian Temple. Brian Temple is another person that supports us on Patreon. And we have a bunch of people that help us out at all different levels. They all get the after show. And I have an update on the White Cruiser today.
Oh.
For the after show. Yeah. Haven't heard about that in a while, have you?
Forgot you had it. I'm sure you did, too.
I did. I'm not even sure what it's like to drive, but we'll see. So we have the after show. It's a separate podcast that's a separate feed and everything. It's only available through Patreon, but everybody gets it over there. So go to patreon.com/makingit, sign up, and help us out at any level, and you'll get the after show. And we won't talk about AI this week. In the after show. Mm-hmm. Jimmy might. Anyway, big thanks to everybody that helps us out over there. It really does matter. We're very grateful. Do you guys have anything to recommend?
I talked about the Colin Quinn thing, which is great because Colin Quinn is a real working class comedian, but he really can nitpick society and break it down into very funny anecdotes. And he talks about life on the computer and life in the comments section in his new special, which is interesting because we can talk forever about how society's changed from 10 years ago. 10 years ago, every comedian wanted to be on Netflix. Every comedian wanted to be on HBO. Now the comedians aren't waiting anymore. They're just putting their hour, hour and a half, 2 hour long specials on YouTube, and they're very successful. And they're not getting the big paydays, but they're getting it back in live performances because now people know who they are or people are refreshed about them. And Colin Quinn's always been a New York favorite. Anyway, check it out. It's good. I'll send you guys the link. Oh, it's a special that he recorded at he must have been doing a corporate event for psychologists because a lot of his stuff is
interesting
psychology based. A lot of the comedy, he kind of talks to the audience a lot. And it's really cool because it's a private event or a corporate event. And he's talking directly to them as if he's like in a group of people he knows. So it makes it a little bit more relatable. I'll find it and send it to you guys.
Cool.
My pick this week is from filmmaker Max Joseph. His video is called, it's all about happiness. It's called Happiness, the Science Behind Why We're Miserable and What Makes Us Happy. And it's just a really good video. It talks about, the title says it all, the science behind happiness and the chemicals your brain uses to determine. And then there's like different levels of, different categories of happiness, where there's family happiness, there's friends happiness, there's success as a career, there's money, and how these different little chemical levels affect each one, and why success or money doesn't equate to happiness. It might at first, but then lots of people with lots of success and lots of money are still very unhappy. It's just that he makes really amazing videos.
So. Cool.
Mm-hmm.
Right on. So mine is a video that I ran across. So have you guys seen Travis from Shop Nation? Seen the channel Shop Nation?
Yeah, I know it. I know it, yeah.
So he makes really good videos. He has lots of plans for projects, and he makes videos about like building out your shop, and his shop is like meticulous, you know, super nice, well put together. A little bit unrealistic. It's so clean. It's that kind of a shop. But he does make very good videos. He's really good in front of the camera, and he does a lot of 3D printing. He has a 3D printing business and a print farm and stuff outside of the woodworking stuff. So I stumbled across a course that's coming out about building a print farm business, you know, 3D printing business with a print farm. And so he has a channel called Print Farm Academy. And I happened to just get served one of the videos from this channel. And it was about why I charge $55 for this 3D printed part. And I watched the video and it's like, let's see, how long is it? 11 minutes long. And it is a very direct, very specific deep dive on how do you price a 3D printed part. And it's fantastic information. Super well put together and well spoken, but it's also very detailed and, And he talks about all the things to consider about building a price for a thing that you're going to sell, and, you know, keeping up your printers and all this type of stuff. And it was just, it's like great information. It just, I was, you know, a lot of things like that. When you see videos that are kind of, I'm going to explain this piece of my business, it's like a little bit of explanation and then a whole lot of fluff and a whole lot of general, you know, download my thing to find out the details and whatever. And he goes through every single bit of it. And he offers some tools, some like Excel documents that he's built to help calculate this stuff that, you know, you can download, and but it makes sense. But he goes over all of it in the video, and it was just refreshing to find something with a whole lot of information. Very useful for, you know, if you're trying to build a 3D printing business, I guess.
Peter McKinnon put out a video
yesterday
about a new polarizing ND filter that he's releasing. And I got curious about what the comments were going to be. And so I went and started reading the comments, which was just a bad idea. Because, I mean, he's got lots of people who just love what he does, and he puts out and he makes amazing equipment. And there are people like, you know, complaining about price, complaining about another YouTuber selling things. And he ended up responding to a couple people, and he's like, this is what I do for a living. This is what I've always done. Nothing has changed. These things are expensive to make and develop and test and go through all of this. And we just live in an Amazon Timu world where we just expect everything to be cheap and at our doorstep instantly, right away. And I don't know why I get curious about comments, but I go and read other people's comments, and sometimes it makes me feel bad. But
yeah. Well, because you kind of empathize with that person.
Yeah. Who
then has to, feels like they have to defend themselves and like explain.
Well, you have to decide what your opinion is. You have to read all the comments.
That's why Which I one has it. The most upvotes? Yeah, that's how I feel too.
Yeah. That's funny. You don't want to stand out.
Did we talk about the Colin and Samir episode about YouTubers asking for money? Did we talk about that?
I think we did.
I don't know. It doesn't sound familiar.
Okay, well, the most recent Colin and Samir, I think it was the most recent podcast episode, is about YouTubers asking for money. And it's not quite the same thing. But it does kind of expose a lot of the same stuff that we've talked about in recent months about advertising budgets changing and overhead cost and people who just want to make things and how expensive it is to actually make things to give to people for free. But it's a really interesting discussion, actually, on how the advertising world around what all of us do has just evaporated and how that's affecting people in a different way and how people are coping with it and stuff. So it may actually, to that person who left that comment, that podcast episode would answer some of those questions probably, but not that that's ever going to happen. But anyway, cool. Well, you guys got anything else for this week? Okay, I guess those squeaks probably mean no. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. No. We'll see you next time.
Bye. Love you.
Boing!